Welcome to the Nicholas Natale Show. Today on the podcast, guest Kyle Rodriguez, the Air Force's newest pilot. Him and Nick are going to be doing part one on their series on minimalism and the burb life. Kyle and Nick are going to be chronologically going through their time living in the suburban, and they're going to dive into what it was really like living in there with a 9-to-5 job, why they did it, an overview of the first few months of starting out when Nick did this. And let me tell you this, he ate peanut butter for like a short period of time because that's all he had, and he got like... it was really bad for his nutrition. Anyways, this week's riddle, what bird is always out of breath? Tune into the end of the show and I'll reveal the answer. Head on over to nicholastitale.com/shop. Get yourself a sweatshirt, t-shirt, whatever shirt you want. YouTube.com/NicholasNatale. New videos every Monday. Leave a 5-star review. You could become the reviewer of the week. Someone leave a review. Come on, we haven't had one in a while. As always, this episode is sponsored by Little Webby LLC. LittleWebby.com creates the best darn custom software, websites, and mobile applications. Email them at LittleWebbyLLC@gmail.com and say we sent you for a free 30-minute consultation. And if you would like to support the podcast, go to the show notes. It's anchor.fm, Nicholas Natale Show, /support. You can start a monthly donation as high as $10 and as low as 99 cents. And as medium as $4.99. Anything helps the podcast and the burb life and all of that. We appreciate you. As always, I'm the intern. You're the listener. This is Nick.
I am here today with Nicholas Natale. You probably haven't heard of him, but brought him on as a guest today. Season's greetings, Nick.
Season's greetings, Kyle. It's fantastic to be here on my own show. It feels nice.
Yeah. How does it feel to be on the other side?
It feels a little odd. I don't know quite what to expect. I think that's kind of the flavor that I like, though. It's going to be a good taste in my mouth at the end, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Lots of good tastes. So tell us, what are we doing here? Why are you being interviewed? Let the fans know what's going on. Bring them in the loop.
So we are about to start. This is episode one of a new series. It's probably going to be a little bit, we'll probably throw on some minimalism at the end, maybe interview some people that have also lived in vehicles, but we're going to give the final hurrah on the burb life. And I mean, I think there's no better time than right now because it's going to come to an end pretty soon here. I think September, burb life is going to be officially done for. So this is going to be the full encapsulation of everything that we've done.
Yeah. So we did one podcast together. I don't know, how long was that? Like 6 months ago, back in December. And
wow, yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was when I was home for Christmas break. And we just talked about, you know, a few of the experiences we had in, like, you know, day-to-day life. And I think a lot of people who listened to it reached out to both of us and was like, kind of want to know more. I kind of want to hear, you know, they still have all these questions. So I think this will be a good, just like, you know, beginning to end. Just kind of like a time capsule too for us, I guess, just to look back on all these solid memories, because we were talking about it yesterday and, you know, we've even forgotten all these things that happened to us. So it'll be good to document this and share with all your listeners.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy how, like, there's such a significant part of your life that, like, it almost was my identity to a degree of how involved I was in just living in the burb. And now... it's already been 2 years. What, 2 years since you and I were both in it together? And
yeah,
memories flood away fairly quickly. So let's get into it, man. Right, what's first? What's on the list?
So I guess I just want to, you know, start chronologically and just get into the why. Why? What drove you to do this? Why did you decide to do it the way that you did it? So we'll start with what inspired you. And when did this idea first enter your noggin?
First entered my noggin when I finally took a look at how much student debt I was about to come out with. So I went to college with the idea that I wanted to graduate early to not have so much debt. But I wasn't keeping track as time was going on, you know. It got to, like, probably fall semester of senior year. And I took a look at the numbers and it was like, you're going to come out with 60K. And I was like, 60K? Are you serious? Like, I've just let that go this whole time with no regard for any financial wisdom whatsoever. So then the why became like, well, how do I mitigate something like that? Because it felt pretty massive. But then, so I was, you know, I was brainstorming. I was trying to come up with ideas like how to save money, where am I going to live after college? And just kind of the thought kept getting thrown out here and there, like, you should live in a car. Like, you should maybe bunker down in a car for a little bit. And I remember telling one of my professors, I was like, hey, I'm gonna live in a car now. And he was like, please do not do that. Like, promise me right now that you're not going to do that. And I was like, I can't promise anything. He's like, at least a tiny home. Please promise me. And I was like, get out of town with that attitude, sir. This is anti-burb life talk. and then from there, it was weird. Like, the progression of, like, it actually starting to happen was strange to me. Because at first it started out like a funny idea, like, wouldn't that be like kind of cool if I did it? But then, like, my sister was like, hey, like, our dad, like, would probably give you the burb if you were actually going to live in it. And it kind of got a little more serious, like, every week that passed. And I was like, oh, this might actually go down. I kind of got nervous, honestly. Like, I was like, oh, shoot, like, I actually might start living in this burb. And That was the catalyst. And then after we actually received the burb, my brother Daniel, he swung in and saved me, because there's not a chance I was going to be able to create a camper from nothing. My skill set is wired much differently than his.
Gotcha. So I remember you telling me that you said your uncle gave you the Suburban?
It's my sibling's dad.
Okay, gotcha. And did he give it to you with the contingency that you have to live in it if I'm going to give it to you? Or is it like, oh, I'm not using this, here you go?
Yeah, it's interesting, because that the burb had, like, passed through both of my brothers, and I don't know too much about their experience with, like, driving it and using it, but I think it was pretty short-lived for both of them, and it finally got back to their dad, and he was just having it chill. I don't know if, like, he's probably driving it once a week to the donut shop or something like that. And he said, yeah, he's like, I'll give it to you, but you got to be legit about moving into it. Like there's no point of me giving it to you if you're not going to move in. Just such an odd deal to make with somebody.
It's awesome, though, that he just gave it to you. Do you think this would have happened if he didn't, you know, initially give you that? Would you have, like, looked for your own van to build? Or is it just kind of like, since it lined up, that was the move?
That's a great question. I think I would have looked for a van or something, but I probably would have been dumb enough to live in my Accord for as long as I could, I think. Because, I mean, I was still living off that college budget. So by the time it got to me, like, everything I had saved up was just pretty much going straight into the burb and the materials to make it.
Makes sense. All right, let's talk about the building phase. I guess, take us through that. Tell us about the process, who helped, and just, I guess, like, the timeline of how long that took.
My brother Daniel is pretty much the brains behind most all of it. Like, we would come up with stuff together, but his mind is made, I don't know, I want to say made for carpentry, but that doesn't sound right. You get the gist, though. He would, like, make these diagrams and drawings of, like, where to put the bed and, like, where to put the couch and, like, how to put the shelves in. And we just kept brainstorming back and forth of what would be best. And then as far as building it goes, it was pretty much like keeping the burb at his house. And I would go over there probably I'd probably drive up on weekends, because we started my last semester of college, the spring semester. And it took us probably, in total, we probably worked on it for, like, between 4 and 6 months, but, like, more consistently once I had graduated. And, yeah, and most of the memories are just, like, me and him sitting in the burb, just, like, blasting music and just, like, drilling until, like, 10 p.m. at night and thinking, oh, man, the neighbors are probably so upset with this, but we have no option, you know, like. We were like, we had a deadline. I was like, dude, I'm gonna move out August 8th, man. We got to get this cranking.
Oh, crazy. How much did it cost for all that, to, you know, all the wood, all the materials?
I'm not sure, because my brother, like I said, was super generous with, like, one, his time, and two, like, funding a lot of the materials. I think I probably put in maybe $600 to $1,000, and he put in way more than I did. So I'm not sure, probably at least another 1,000, but maybe less, maybe a lot less. I feel like I could be estimating wrong just because time has gone on, but
yeah, it's been a while. Yeah, I remember a lot of weekends you'd be like, yeah, I'm not gonna be here this weekend, gotta drive home and work on the burb. And I was like, it's pretty awesome, it's gonna happen.
Well, there was rats living in it when it first got started. We had to clean all those the rat turds out of there, and then spiders were living in there too. You know, they were calling dibs before me. And then I think one of the highest moments was my brother sending me a video of him like pouring water into the sink and him panning down and just seeing it go straight onto the street. And I'm like, that's incredible. I love that.
Pretty sure it's in your how to live in your car video. I remember that shot.
It has to be. The number one thing you need to live in your car is just a hole straight through your entire vehicle. And I have more than one now.
There's plenty of those. is there anything you would do different in the building phase? Like something you wish you had in there that you didn't after knowing what you do now? I guess for people thinking about, you know, this might be an idea, what are things that you wish you had known before while building it?
So we originally had built like this design where there was that bed, the bed on the side, and there was going to be an extra slab of plywood underneath it that you could push out and turn it into a queen bed. And that never got used, but I thought that was always a cool idea. I think I would have done the couch differently probably. Because, I mean, as you know, the setup to, like, take that thing up and off and put it in the middle and then sleep on it every night.
More like a futon style would have been cool, you know, just pops down.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, if it could flip out somehow. And I wish, for me, I wish there was, like, a – like, there wasn't a good – there was a good place to chill on the couch, but there wasn't a good place to really put, like, your laptop or, like, if you wanted to sit and work for a long period of time.
Yeah.
There wasn't really a space for it. Yeah. I can't knock the design too much because, like, I mean, it turned into my home pretty quick, so I really enjoyed it. But I think if I had to do it again, there's probably some more adjustments that I would have made.
Definitely. So that's pretty much all the building stuff, unless you have anything else to add.
Oh, yeah, sure. We had this idea for a swivel chair to get put in, like this RV swivel chair that you could turn around, because we wanted to, like, if I brought friends over, I wanted to be able to turn the whole driver's seat around to hang out. And we went to the junkyard and we bought this massive RV swivel chair, and we drilled four huge like slits under where the driver's seat was gonna go, because you had to set it on top. Didn't even fit, and that's why I started to have four holes underneath the driver's seat. It would just shoot hot air right under you, just consistently.
Yeah, and I remember looking from the couch, just having a view of the street. Straight up.
That's where it came from, because we bought this chair, didn't even check if it fit first. That was really stupid. That was bad.
Pretty funny.
I think, you know what else was one of my favorite features for a while, until we finally got it fixed, was the old push to start action. Because the first time, we'll probably touch on it, but the first time we took it out, the starter went out, and we just put in a push to start, and it was just a button for a year and a half instead of actually turning the key, which is hilarious.
That is funny. All right, so you guys finish it up, and what happens after that? Do you have a trial period? Is it like you're finishing the night before you have to go move into it? What's going on?
Me and my brother did one trial run where we drove it from home to Santa Monica, which is like 2 hours, and that's exactly it. The starter, like, as soon as we got there, it just wouldn't start anymore. And I was like, oh no, you know, like, we'd been working on it for months already. Then it was like this big fiasco of, like, trying to figure out whether it was like the ignition or the starter or whatever it was. And we had to end up replacing the starter on the side of the street. Granted, the first time we ever drove it, and I'm like, oh, yikes. But then we ended up fixing it, and it was fine. And we had headed down to Newport, did some fishing. And that's kind of, I feel like if I hadn't had done that trial run with my brother, I probably wouldn't have felt like as comfortable as I did moving into it, because he he like even just in that weekend was like kind of showing me the ropes per se of like, this would be, these are good places to park probably. This is probably a good way for you to like use this thing that we built, the shelves or the drawers or whatever, like handle them this way. And then after that, I started doing trial runs by myself, which was basically parking the burb outside of my parents' house or my mom's house, sorry, and just sleeping there overnight. And that was terrible. This is like on this main road and cars were zooming by. And I did that, like, I wouldn't sleep. And I did it every night until I finally fell asleep. You know, like I was like, I have to get over this fear of sleeping outside. So
definitely
I did it for a bit.
What point did you, I guess, finally feel comfortable sleeping in the burb?
Dang. I don't think I felt comfortable until maybe like, I think I could fall asleep after 1 month, but I don't think I felt comfortable until like 3 months. That took me, it took me a pretty long time to feel like safe.
Yeah, that makes sense. I remember just my experience, the first 2 weeks were, you know, rough.
Brutal.
Pretty much after that, though, you start to, you know, get comfortable, but you still have those sketchy nights where you're just like paranoid.
You're like paranoid and like every little sound sets you off, you know. You're like, oh, they're gonna get me, somebody's at my door. And like, I, something that was dumb that I did was like, I locked my phone or my watch in the burb one time and I picked the lock myself and I got it out like right before I started living in it, and that sketched me out because I was like, oh, if I can do it, somebody's gonna break in and get me.
Oh boy.
It was terrible. Yeah,
so I guess this first part, we're mostly going to be focused on your time alone and, you know, what it was like living by yourself, because you lived alone for, you moved in August, right? And mm-hmm. I joined you like end of March, April 1st, something like that. And so, you know, you had 8 months by yourself. What was the beginning of that experience like? What was your daily routine before I got there?
Oh, man, the daily routine. It was tough. It changed a lot. I think, like, the first night I parked somewhere that, like, we had scoped out the town before I moved down there, and my mom was like, do not park on that street, and the first street I parked to sleep on was that street. And
kind of sketchy street right outside base?
No, it wasn't that one. There was, like, this hill, but, yeah, that one, too, that was kind of sketch.
Definitely.
And this cop rolled up right away and, like, turned his car at me and flashed his lights at me, and I was like, oh, this is the end. This is already done.
Right at the beginning.
Yeah, and then he peeled out or whatever. But I think my daily routine was really, like, I would wake up extra early because I didn't want anybody to know I was living in the burb. Mm. Like, I didn't want people that I was parking in front of their houses to know. So I'd get there late, probably around 10-ish, and then I'd wake up around 4:30, maybe 5, and then I'd head into work and try to work a 12-hour day to pay off the loans, go to the gym, go to Starbucks, come home. Yeah.
So did any of that get, you know, pretty monotonous? Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Did it get, you know, boring? Did it get repetitive? What were you just, you know, high off of life on this new experience? Did you ever think about not doing it anymore? Things like that.
I don't think it ever became monotonous to me just because it was so new and such a different experience. And I think I really enjoyed the solitude of it. I really enjoyed that I was going to work and then making videos after work every day. Like, it was like my two favorite things. And then I actually had time to think and like pray and be by myself and enjoy some time. I don't know. I really did like that part of it. The only time I don't think I ever considered quitting or leaving, but I think some of the hardest parts were when like people saw me struggling, like not eating, and also like struggling with scenarios at work where I'm getting in trouble or whatever. And people are like, dude, you need to move out. Like, this isn't safe for you. You're malnourished. You're treating your body poorly, and your work hates you for it. And I think those were hard for me to be like, I'm going to see this through kind of deal. But I don't know. I liked it a lot, so I don't think I ever was. I wanted to quit because it was hard, but I didn't want to quit because I kind of like suffering.
Makes sense. So what was it? What was it like that? I guess that first paycheck. You get a paycheck. You know, you have no rent to pay. What's that like? And what'd you do with all that money?
All the dough. I think the finances became really easy in my mind, because I had really easy decisions to make with the money. I had two things I had to do, tithe and then pay off my debt. So like from there, it was like, okay, I got a paycheck. There it goes, you know, same day. Like you get it on a Friday, you spend it all on a Friday. So I think the feeling was like, I got to put this toward my loans before I blow it most of the time.
What kind of safety net did you have just in case, you know, the burr breaks down or an emergency
situation, you know? When the first day I left, I think I had $2,000 in my savings account, and I think I had like $750 or $1,000 in my checking account or something like that. Maybe less than that. Yeah, probably about that. And that was kind of enough for me. I never went below $2,000 in the savings, because as you know, the burb did end up having a couple incidences where we had to take it in, where we did have to take it in. But yeah, that was a safety net. But really, I never really consider them safety nets. Like, I probably would have blown through it if I had to.
Makes sense. You're telling me about, you know, your work culture, and you said you were like super tired at work. Were people noticing, like, when you're rolling in? Because you were driving the burb to work. I don't want to say it's obvious that someone's living in it, but it's, you know, you could make some assumptions about it. Were people saying things to you? Was it a weird environment where you're hearing rumors about yourself? What, you know, this is your first week, couple weeks there, and might not be the best look, you know. What's going on with that?
It was a rough transition, man. It was tough. I was tired, and I was starving. So I think people could see my eyeballs like getting sunken into my face. But two, yeah, I think exactly what you're saying. Like, people would come up to me and be like, "Hey, where do you live?" And like try to pry stuff out of me. Like, "What town? What street do you live on? Like, what's up with your car? Hey, I see you have this car that looks like it has curtains on it. Why do you have curtains on it?" And I'm like, dude, mind your business, man. Come on. But then like there was a lot of the work culture that I came into that was astonishing to me. Was like, I got a lot of ridicule just for being young. And on top of that, trying to pay off my debt. Like I don't want to say it became a target, but it became an easy, like I had so much ammo for somebody to talk about in a negative light that it constantly happened. And then as soon as I started making videos and putting them out, like eventually somebody at work saw them, and that was kind of the beginning of the end. But the work culture was tough for me to acclimate to, for sure. I learned a lot about how to navigate through conversations that are uncomfortable. Of like, there was this one guy that would always ask me, like, he would see me parked around places, like he was looking for me or something. He'd be like, "Hey, I saw you, the burb, parked over at this place at this time. What's going on with that?" And I ended up finding out what his hobby was, and I'd be like, "Whoa, really? Hey, how's your hobby?" Like, just not giving him an inch. So I don't know if that's the best strategy, but that's the one I started employing.
Why do you think people are so fascinated with your personal life, and why do you think they cared so much if you were living in your car?
I think there's probably a few reasons. I think different can often be threatening at times. I think the work culture that it was is government, and government often is known for its very, like, I would just say beige. Like, the color beige is how I would describe government culture, just because it's so plain, and anything out of the ordinary is, you know, scary. And also, I really do think, like, the age difference said a lot, because even a lot of them were anti, like, paying off your debt quick. Like, they didn't see the point of working hard and like trying to achieve a goal, which I think I also found a lot of difficulty connecting with people over.
So did this build any, you know, enemies or people who disliked you for this reason?
You know, gosh dang, I don't know if there was one guy that just didn't like me because I was young or what his deal was, but there was a lot of things that were toward me, actions toward me that weren't always very kind. But once somebody found the YouTube videos, somebody snitched on me, and then like they just called me a bum. They said I was a bum abusing the system, when in fact it was the opposite. But it got sent all the way through the system, and I got a government investigation, like a full-blown audit of like everything I was doing, from like the time I got in, the time I got out, the text messages I was sending on my work phone, the Slack messages, the emails, the work I had done, like everything I had ever said I had done, and not even said I had done, was assumed that was done, like got audited to the T. And that was tough. And they kept saying like, like if you live in a car, you gotta move out of your car, like you can't be doing that. And they get that caused for some controversy,
because, you know, you're not doing anything wrong. If anything, you're trying to set yourself up for success, but it's all about the assumption.
Yeah, it was tough. I had a really good manager though that fought for me and never asked me questions about that stuff. I think he appreciated the fact that I was working hard and working towards something, so he always went to bat for me, and he never asked where I lived, and I always appreciated
that. That's awesome. You said you were bullied at work. Do you, were they just, you know, giving you wedgies, giving you...
I got like 6 swirlies one time.
That's rough.
In a full toilet. Nah, I don't know. It's tough for me to say bullying, but I think there was definitely some harassment, like people pulling up YouTube videos at work and making fun of me to my face, or just like literally saying like if I couldn't solve a problem, like you're stupid because you're young, or you're stupid because of XYZ. And when it's like a 20-year-old that recently came out of college, let alone a Christian university, surrounded by grown men in their 40s, like just day after day berating, if that's the right word, it crushes your spirit to a degree. I had this one guy that was like always on my case about wanting to pay my debt off, like saying how stupid I was and how like idiotic it was, and like it'll never happen, so why even try? And then like come 1 year later, when I no longer worked with him, I bumped into him, and he was like, hey man, I just want you to know that it was because of you I downgraded on my house, and I'm starting to pay off my loans. And this guy like tortured me,
wow,
like day in and day out. And I was like, this is a full circle story here. I'm shocked.
Awesome.
I was blown away.
Inspiration right there.
I guess it was not fun daring it though, but I'm happy it had a good resolution.
Definitely. So that's one of the guys you met who, you know, you made an impact on. You also mentioned an interesting character who told you you would be great for the porn industry. What's that about?
Yeah, it's in the same lines of like those old, I shouldn't even say old, older men that were like just saying crazy stuff to me. So there was a guy that I used to work with that was in the porn industry previously. He was not an actor, I should say. I should make that clear. But he'd always say weird stuff like that. Like he'd be like, hey Nick, you know you can make so much money if you got in the porn industry, or like, hey man, like you should really consider quitting this job and getting into porn, man. Like you'd be good, man, a blonde hair, blue eyed guy like you. And I'd be like, dude, you are freaking me out. Stop saying that weird stuff to me.
Yeah, that's gotta be pretty uncomfortable.
At work? Like, come on now. It's weird. I mean, it's weird to say in general, but even more so at work. Double down.
So it sounds like there's a lot of people that were just, you know, very intrigued with your life, you know, peeking in your burb and
that one guy.
Always asking you where you live. What do you have to say to those people now?
What do I have to say to those people now?
Do you understand where they're coming from? Like, or are you just like, give me some privacy?
I would say I understand. Like, I get it. I get that it was different. I guess I get that it's not the normal path. I think if I had anything to say, something that I learned was like to invest in young people is really important. Even the young people I've gotten to work with now, I always assume that they're highly intelligent and capable. I never assume the opposite. And I think it'd be fair to say the same for things that are doing people that are doing things differently. It's safe to say that, like, hey, maybe they actually thought through this. That's why they're doing things differently. So those people in specific, man, I don't know. I'd say lighten up, cheer up, man. Focus on some happy stuff.
Embrace the different.
Embrace the different and stop talking about porn to me. That's what I would say.
So it sounds like it was a pretty rough transition, you know, getting into it, finding your ground and, you know, all these new coworkers, things like that. Another challenge you mentioned is showering.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know, you know, we're staying at Camp Pendleton at the time. I don't think Nick's really, you're not really staying on base yet, are you? It's mostly
staying
on base for the gym and pretty much it, gym and showering. So I guess tell the listeners about the showers and what that's like.
The showers, man, the smell of the showers on base is forever ingrained in my mind. It is like, it's like a porta potty inside. It's like an indoor. That's not what it was like. It's the normal shower and bathroom, but it just smells that way. The first time I had ever showered for the Burb Life, let me say this. I wasn't a guy in sports that enjoyed getting naked in front of other dudes. It wasn't all about that life. It wasn't about, like, showing the package to other people. That's always... It's caught me as a little strange when guys were too comfortable doing that, but it's whatever. But when I got to the showers for the first time, there was like a whole platoon of dudes in the shower. There's like 15 guys in this communal shower where everything is open for, like, no room for imagination. Literally, you see it all, you know? And I remember thinking to myself, this is going to be my stopping point. this is what I'm not going to be able to get
right
through
there, the showers.
I texted my brother the first day. It was the first day, and I was like, hey man, like, there's 1,000 guys in the shower butt naked, old and young, and I can't do this. And he was like, get over it. And I was like, that's terrible advice. Stupid. But you know, I ended up going for it, and let me say, it's liberating to be naked with 15 other dudes. I'm just kidding. But
like, you're comfortable with it now, or is it still just as cringy for you?
It's just as cringy for me, for sure. And it was dirty, and you have to wear your shower sandals, you know, and that's a whole another thing. Like, when you're at your own house, you never wear shower sandals. But when you're in a public space, you do. So it's like, it's always like a reminder of, like, this isn't like a home, you know. This is a dirty public shower that you're sharing with
them. Those shower sandals, there's some consequences for that.
I can't wait to talk about that.
So one common thing, I know we've been talking about the showers for a while, but a common thing, even after, you know, 8 months of me living there, is I'd still forget my underwear, my clothes, or whatever in the car. Is that happening to you a lot when you're by yourself, or were you just way more focused without me there as a distraction?
Oh, dude, I was forgetting stuff every day. I was sweating, doing cardio, drenched in sweat, and I'd forget all of my clothes. So I'd shower and then put on sweaty shirts, pants, and underwear.
Oh, man.
And then I would get to the burb, and I changed my shirt, and I had a hook on the outside to, like, hang up a wet towel or something like that. I'd hang up my shirt or my towel, and then I'd just drive off, and it'd fly off every day, and I'd lose a shirt and a towel, and I'd be like, great, now I'm down to one towel. Yeah, there's nothing left for me. Every day, man. It was terrible. I've slept in sweaty underwear before because of that. It's stupid. I mean, I guess that also goes to like me running out of underwear and then showering and having to wear it, but it happened a lot.
Oh man, that's rough. What'd you do on the weekends outside of work? What was that like?
Oh man. I would spend a lot of time in Starbucks for sure. I'd head down to the beach. I started writing down which beaches had the cleanest bathrooms. I kept the journal and I'd have a rating of 1 to 10. It was like San Clemente, Oceanside, Carlsbad, and I'd write like, this one usually has stocked toilet paper but dirty ground, or this, like, I always like, so if I ever went back, I'd open my journal and be like, can I, like, how close can I park to it? Does it have a water fountain? Does it have a shower? All that stuff. But I spent most of my, I feel like I spent a lot of weekends, like, friends would come down and experience the burb life for the first time, which was exciting to a degree. But also, like, odd because they didn't share the same sentiment that this is my home to them. It was like, this is a camper and we're camping. And I'm like, we're not camping, we're living, baby. Come on.
This is my day-to-day life. You don't get it.
You don't get it. And they would be up paranoid and I'd be like, you're here for one day. They just sacrificed a night of sleep. I'm like, bro, that's my 7 days. Come on. Get with it.
Do it again for seven more.
It's never ending. I'm never gonna have sleep.
That's funny. Who's your first visitor, and what? How was that?
Ooh, my first visitor. I think my first visitor was my friends Josh and Gabe. It was good. It was good. I think it was definitely a different experience for both of them, because we ended up sleeping by the Oceanside Pier, losing our frisbee in the gutter from throwing it, and then just like. Oceanside's a weird place past midnight, man, and I'll tell you, and we were walking down the pier, and there was this guy that had just caught a leopard shark fishing, and it was huge, it was like 6 feet, maybe 5 or 4, I don't know the logistics or anatomy of leopard sharks, but he flopped it onto the pier, and it seemed like he had no idea what to do at that point. And there was a crowd around him freaking out because there was this live leopard shark that nobody knew what to do with. And we just kept on walking by. I'm like, this is a day in the life, baby. And I think that was also strange for them.
Yeah, a little shock for them, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So,
or the homeless people.
Yeah, I bet. Who else visited and how were their experiences? I remember you had one of your friends from Netherlands, actually, come visit.
Yeah, I had a friend named Chris that me and another friend of mine actually met couch surfing, which is a website where people just let you sleep on their couch while you're traveling, which can be very sketchy. But we ended up meeting this guy from the Netherlands, and a year had gone by since I had been there, and he saw that I was posting stuff about the burb, and he messaged me and he said, hey, if I fly to San Diego, can I sleep in your burb? And I was like, holy crap, yeah, you can. Because he was all about the burb experience. And I remember telling him, I was like, hey, man, like, I got friends in town if you want to stay, like, on a bed or a couch, like, whatever. And he's like, no, I'm here for the burb experience. This guy flew from the Netherlands. Flew
across the world.
And spent, like, I think he spent 2 or 3 days in the burb with me. Like, a full weekend just sleeping in the car. And he loved it. He was ecstatic about it. But I remember he kept asking me, like, you do this every day? And I was like, yeah, man, I do.
That's awesome. And did he fly there just for that weekend and then fly back? Or did he, like...
He only spent, like, a week in San Diego. Like, he only spent, like, 1 or 2 more days after that. So I don't know. That's what really got me. I was like, if he's really flying from the Netherlands to San Diego just to stay in the burb like that, that's wild. Making an
international impact.
That's right, let the people know. I mean, I think the Netherlands should be full of burbs by now, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's really hit their culture hard.
Yeah, definitely that van life. Did you interact with other people, you know, sharing a similar experience, whether they're living in their cars or, you know, just homeless? Do you have a lot of those experiences while you're living in the suburban?
I had a lot of experiences like talking to homeless people, like a much more, and I think I felt like I had greater empathy for them because like once nighttime came, I could see them through my window, you know, like I could see them walking the streets or like looking for places to sleep. And I think that resonated with me quite a bit. But they'd come up, like, it was like every time I cooked outside, like on the tailgate, like a homeless person would come up, which I thought was strange because a lot of times they'd come up when I'm cooking and I'd be like, hey man, like, you want some food? Because I felt like it's probably why you're just starting up a conversation with me. But they'd always be like, nah, man, I'm full. Which I'm like, I don't know. I don't know about that. I feel like, I don't know. Anyway, besides the point, I had a couple homeless guys, or at least one homeless guy that came up to me, and I started sharing the gospel with him a little bit. And I'm like, hey, man, do you know Jesus? You know? And he's like, I know Jesus. I was like, oh, good. And he was like, I just saw him in my backyard. And I was like, oh, oh, whoa. Okay. And then he's like, I saw Jesus. He was playing rock and roll with some aliens, singing Led Zeppelin. And I was like, oh, mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's what was
happening. He's like, aliens. He's like, aliens are among us, man. He's like, I could be an alien. I've just taken the form of a human. And I was like, I got to get out of here, man, but it's been really good talking to you. Please don't follow me to where I park next. That was interesting. Saw a lot of homeless people that were naked. I gave this one lady a two pairs of basketball shorts, and I gave her one of my pairs of basketball shorts because she was butt naked.
Nice.
And then she said, thank you. And then she cussed me out for like 5 minutes. And I was like, mixed signals here. Mixed signals.
Are we friends or?
Are we cool or do we have a problem? Because if we have a problem, I'm going to take my shorts back, ma'am.
So during this time, I remember you making a lot of YouTube videos. You're posting very consistently, just kind of about your experience and other random things. What was the reaction to what you were doing from, you know, friends, family? Were people reaching out concerned? What was the support like?
I think it was a mix of both. I think like every time I told somebody in person that I was living in a car, there was always like a sense of like, oh no, like, don't do that. There's a better way, which I resonate with because I probably looked terrible. Like I probably looked super malnourished. But I think the other side of my friends were like, oh man, this looks fun. I want to come down and see what it's all about. And I think a lot of people did come down to see what it's all about. And that was really cool. I got a lot of support because like my friends would give me rides to places whenever I had to go somewhere, or they would be super understanding if I was like, hey, I am down to go. I just can't get there cause my car won't make it. And they'd be like, no problem. So I felt like a lot of the support was like through action too. Mm-hmm. Like it was reaching out like, hey man, I hope you're safe. But it was also like, hey, I'll hook it up. I'll give you a sandwich. I'll help you out.
Supporting you through your journey.
That's right.
One cool story you said is a Starbucks barista one time gave you a free drink because you looked sad. Is that because you were, were you actually sad or were you just kind of a mess after, you know?
Oh, man. So, in the burp life, you go to Starbucks because it's got a lot of what you need. It's got a Wi-Fi. It's got a Wi-Fi. It's got Wi-Fi.
Got bathrooms. Ice water.
Ice water. You can stay inside. Nobody bothers you too much. So I went to this one like probably 3 or 4 days in a row, you know. And I think I like remembered the barista's name. I said hi or whatever. And exactly what you said, she came up to me and said, I just wanted to give you this coffee because you looked really sad. And that day I was not sad at all. I felt like it was one of my better days. And I was like, oh, dang, really?
Oh, that's flirting with you, man.
I don't know. I could hear the sympathy in her voice. She like dropped it off like I was like I was a needy person that she was afraid of. She was like, hey, I got you this coffee because you look sad. Goodbye. And I was like, oh, shoot. I'm like, I'm scaring people off. Maybe I should take more showers. I don't know.
That's funny. So, Starbucks is a spot to be. What would you like to say to Starbucks now after them, you know, entertaining you for countless nights? Are you like their biggest supporter now or?
Wow. Starbucks, please sponsor the Burb Life, because you're a great asset to the team. That's what I would say. One time I had this frozen bag of chicken that I kept in my cooler.
This is funny.
This frozen bag of chicken I kept in my cooler, and I couldn't, like, it was the weekend, so I couldn't microwave it. All my ice had melted, and it was just like sitting in this bag of Tupperware. I think I put it in Tupperware or something like that, but it had sat out for like a day and a half, and I was like, this is all I got to eat. And I went into the Starbucks and I asked the barista, I was like, hey, could you heat this up for me? This is this Tupperware of raw chicken. And she had to ask her manager, and she's like, I don't know if I can do that. And I was like, can you please do it? I'm starving. And then she did it. That was, I really felt like that was like, oof, I'm getting low on the totem pole here. Yeah.
It's funny because I remember in Thailand, you had to buy this thing called a toasty from good old Toasties from the gas station. They would just heat it up for you, but here in America, we don't really do much of that.
Mm-mm, not a chance.
Especially at gas stations like they did.
Sketch.
All right, here's a hot topic for you.
Hit me.
You have any run-ins with the police, and how were you treated during those?
Oh man, that is a hot topic. Like I said, I had the first night where a cop showed up and just flashed his lights at me. I had another time where I was parked at, I don't know if I should be disclosing all these locations, but I guess I don't live there anymore, so it's fine. I was parked at the Oceanside Harbor, and I was folding laundry in the burb, and I was on the phone, and these bright lights came up behind me and shined their lights through the back curtain because there was a slit at the top, you know? And it was, like, right into my eyeballs because it was the perfect eye line. I was like, oh, balls. And then I got a knock, which, as you and I are always saying, is the worst thing you want to hear when you live in a car is a knock. Because you don't know what's on the other side. But I, like, was on the phone, and I was like, hey, whoever I was talking to, I was like, hey, I got to go. I'm pretty sure this is cops. And I just hung up. And so they knocked on the driver door, and I got out of the back driver door because that's the only way you could get in and out, really, you know? Yeah. And so the cop was like, whoa, what's going on here, you know? And there was two, and one of them was already behind me because I had opened the door, and he was near the driver's side. And the other one came from the front and, like, came at me pretty good. And was like, hey, what are you doing in there, man? And I was like, laundry. And he was like, you have anybody else in there? You're like, who else is in there? And I was like, hey, man, like, I just made this thing. You want a tour? Like, it's really cool. Like, I love showing it off. So if you want to see it, like, I'd be happy to show you. And he was just like, nah, it's cool. And he's like, why are you in your car? And I told him, like, trying to pay off my debt. You know, that's pretty much the main reason. He was like, all right, well, don't stay here. Please leave. And I was like, okay. And then they just drove off. But I felt like the one guy that flanked me pretty good, he was ready for action.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, so I felt like that. I got lucky there because then I stayed at the same spot because I didn't know where else to go, and they never said anything, so it was kind of cool. The other time was I was sleeping on base, and this was the first time I had ever slept on base, and I had this weird feeling. It was like the first weekend in a long time where I had, like, nothing planned. I just wanted to, like, sleep by the beach and just chill. Like, I felt like I was approaching burnout rapidly, so I just had this weird feeling that, like, something was gonna happen, and I fell asleep, and I slept through my alarm because I always wake up early, and something happened where it didn't go off, and I woke up to a knock on the door again, and I could just hear chattering of, like, four or five dudes, like, I don't think anybody's in there. If there is, I think he's dead. Like, if that's a body that we see, that guy's probably dead in there. And I was like, oh, God. Like, what's my move here? And I sat right in the center of the burb because you can't see from all the curtains. Like, none of the cracks can let you see where it is. So I moved, and I just sat there, and I was like, dang, should I get out or should I just wait until they leave? And I waited, and I waited, like, 10 minutes, and they all just kept standing there. And I was like, balls, man. And I got out, and all four had ARs. And they're like, holy crap, we thought you were dead in there. We were about to call someone to come get you and pick you up. And I played it off. I was just trying to sleep here to catch the swell, man. Just trying to get up, get some skimboarding. And they're like, well, don't. Once again, they hit me with the don't do that. Stop. Like, you can't sleep here. Get out. I was like, okay, man, after I hit the swell, I'll for sure leave. And then I didn't sleep there for a while. I got spooked.
Wow. Overcame a lot of adversity. A lot of people telling you not to.
Never you, Kyle. You always supported me.
Oh, yeah. I supported you so much, I had to do it with you.
That's right.
All right, one of the last topics I want to talk about before we wrap up this first episode. What was it like just with your mental state, you know, being alone all the time, not being, you know, you left all your friends from Riverside to, you know, move about 2 hours away, working with all these new people who don't support you, you're living by yourself. Where was your mental state at with all of that?
I think it was an interesting balance of like really high stress, but also really high fulfillment. Cause I really enjoyed that I got time to think. And then I also think that, all of the trials amidst that forced me to rely on God more. So like every time I had a free moment, I was like praying that the bird would start next time I got in it, or I would be praying that I hope I, like, one, I can sleep, and two, I'm safe if I do fall asleep. And I think I also liked the aspect of getting to know myself more, because it really was like I felt like I was hanging out with myself every day, you know, like I'd leave work and be by myself until I went to work the next day. And the solitude I found to be pretty rewarding, honestly, because I wasn't on my phone all the time, because I had a rule. You couldn't be on your a rule for myself that I couldn't be on my phone if it was dark, because I didn't want people to see the light and try to come in or something like that. So like it was just always being outside, and it was always being alone with my thoughts, and it felt healthy. Like when I explain it back, I felt like it was, it kind of sounds unhealthy, but the hard work, the focus on a single goal gave me a lot of purpose, and just it being so new was really refreshing.
Makes sense. What were there any low points that you hit where you're just like, man, like this is not good being alone this much? Or
I think the lowest points was just like how constant the hunger was, how constant the trials at work were, how constant the long hours at work to pay off the debt were, how constant the having to find a new place to park was. Like spending an hour every day trying to find a new safe spot to park was always tough. And just not feeling like I had the means to get food always felt rough. like I felt like I forced myself into this, like once I got one third of the way done with my loans, I was like, I am contracted, I'm obligated to complete this. And there was half of me that was like, oh my gosh, if I could just let myself stop, that might be nice. But yeah, it's a scary place inside your own mind sometimes.
Kind of a pride thing too, like I started this, I gotta finish it. Did you have a timeline of when, you know, after starting it and knowing how much you were making, how much you were spending, did you have a timeline of when you wanted to pay off all your loans by?
Yeah, when I first did the math, I thought I could do it in two, but then once I realized, like,
2 years.
Yeah, 2 years. But I always had in the back of my mind, I wanted to do it in one. That was my real goal. Like, so I calculated it with a friend, and he was like, you could do it in 2 years. And I really wanted to do it in one. So that's how the 1 year really came to be, is like I doubled down on like the idea of paying it off quick.
That's impressive. And in the end, what was the final timeline, the final tally? That
it was 11 months, but I think it would have been a full year if you hadn't been super clutch and saying like, I have your back if you want to blow the rest of your savings on it too. Like, I think that probably would have added another month.
Yeah, 11 months though, that's crazy. So I felt like that was a good you know, overarching, encompassing start of, you know, just experiencing, you know, the first few things you went through. next episode we can get more into, you know, get a little deeper into some stories, what that was like, especially those first few months before I got there. After that, we're going to probably hop into, you know, once I moved in, get into some crazy stories with that. And yeah, hopefully just talk about, you know, minimalism and what that was like and why it's really a good thing and, you know, cleansing of all these materialistic things. So is there anything else you want to add about the start of your experience before we sign off?
No, I think that's it. I think the only thing I would add is the coming episodes of diving into our stories are going to be juicy as can be. So if you're listening, stick around.
Definitely. Yeah. We're going to try to get into as much detail as we can remember. Like I said, it's been 2 years, but we've talked about it a lot. So it's going to be some good stuff. And hopefully we can get into, you know, more depth with that about how God was faithful to both of us through it all and kept us safe. And I think there's some good stuff from there that we haven't, you know, talked about a lot, but good stuff coming, definitely. So, well, Nick, thanks for being on the Kyle Rodriguez show. Oh, I'm just kidding. No, thanks for being on your own show. Appreciate you know, everything you talked about and just being open with your experience. Some good stuff for sure.
Thank you for hosting, Kyle Fire Rod.
Oh yeah,
very I'll much be, so. Look forward to.
I'll be diving in for more hosting and be finishing out this series. And one last question for you. What's the name of this series? Have you come up with anything yet?
I have not. I'm thinking about just putting minimalism in all caps and just put minimalism part one.
Right in your face.
I don't know. Maybe. We'll see how it goes.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for joining us. We'll see y'all on the next episode. And thanks, Nick.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. And done.
That was a podcast. Hopefully you liked it. I know some of it was really cringy. He showered naked with homeless men. Maybe he didn't reveal that in the podcast. Oops. Uploads every Friday, 6 a.m. So wake up, get yourself a coffee. Friday, 6 a.m. Nick doesn't specify whether that's Eastern, Central, Pacific time. So I don't know. Just wake up at 4. And, you know, maybe you could catch it. The real reason you're still here. What bird is always out of breath? A puffin. Didn't? All right. We love you. We appreciate you. Tune back in next week for another pod. See ya.